So we're going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 3, text number 30, or actually 40. Indriyani mano buddhir asya dishtanam ushite aitharva mohatyatyesha gyanamaritya-dehinam. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence of the sitting places of this lust, which veils the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. Please repeat. The senses,
the mind,
and the intelligence,
of
the sitting places of this lust, which veils the real knowledge of the living entity, and bewilders him. Purport. The enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul. And therefore, Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places so that one who wants to conquer the enemy may know where he can be found. Mind is the center of all the activities of the senses, and thus, when we hear about sense objects, the mind generally becomes a reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification. And as a result, the mind and the senses become the repositories of lust. Next, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lustful propensities. Intelligence is the immediate next-door neighbor of the spirit soul. Thus, the intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter, and thus with the mind and senses. The spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses, mistakes this as true happiness. This false identification of the spirit soul is very nicely explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10:84:13. Human being who identifies his body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of birth worshipable, and who goes to the place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath rather than meet men of transcendental knowledge, is to be considered like an ass or a cow. So the verse again. Indriyani mano buddhir asya dishtanam ushite aitharva mohatyatyesha gyanamaritya-dehinam. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust, which veils the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamite Namane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Kauravani Vracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatyade Siddharam. This is the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna, or Arjuna, was asking Krishna, more or less, you've asked me to engage in this warfare, but you also told me not to engage in fruitive activity. So I'm a little bewildered at this time. So Krishna explains the third chapter to Arjuna, that one should work dutifully in the material world, but one should work in the fixed conception of the real self. So throughout the chapter, Krishna is explaining what one's duty is, namely how to perform jaga, different types of sacrifices, and ultimately he says that sacrifice to the demigods provides all the different necessities of life, especially rain and therefore food, grains, etc. And then Krishna says, Shreyan Svadhamo Viguna Paradharma Svanustita Shreyadharmo Nidhyambhaya Shreyadharmo Nidhyakshaya Paradharmo Bhayavaha. That it is better to perform one's own duty, even if it's imperfectly done, than to perform anyone else's duty. Prescribed duty according to one's nature are never influenced, affected by sinful reaction. In other words, our main problem in the material world is that we're trying to do things, or we think we're doing things independently. If we don't know what our duty is, then our only duty becomes to serve our senses. In the modern society, people think their only duty in life ultimately is to serve their senses, or if they're a little bit more advanced, they think their duty is to serve other people's senses. But after all, it's simply trying to serve the unquenchable, unsatisfiable senses in mind. Because modern society is somewhat special because they create desires out of nothing. There's one thing to try to satisfy one's desires. Basically, in every species of life, there are certain necessities of life. But in modern society, they create things out of nothing. And then people are engaged in trying to satisfy those desires. For instance, 100 years ago, there were no cars. But people were not dying on the street because there was no car. But now that they have a car, people are dying on the street because of the car. At the turn of the 1900s, the Ford Foundation put out advertisement that there are so many horses on the street and they're passing so much stool that it's contaminating the whole road. Therefore, everyone should buy a car to solve the horse pollution problem. So indeed, they've solved the horse pollution problem, only to result in a much greater problem due to the car pollution. In any case, people have created necessities of life because now people can't live without a car. They can't live without a computer, and some people can't live without Facebook. They think, what would life be? So we've created these things that are really not necessities, but we take them as such, and therefore much of our energy goes in order to satisfy them. But these are just demands that we've created. And the real demands we take as the basic necessities of life, but there's no real sense in modern society of what the goal of life is and what our duty is in order to achieve it. People think that the rain comes out of accident. They think the planets move out of accident. They think everything is out of accident. So why bother finding out what our obligations and duties are? Our only duty is somehow or another bring home the money and put the bread on the table. If the bread's on the table and the roof doesn't have too many leaks, then we're doing our duty. And beyond that, then we just create extras. We add on to it. But Krishna says that everyone actually has their duty and they should perform it, their own duty, not someone else's duty. And of course, because we don't live in the Vana and Ashram society, people don't know what their duty is, especially in Kali Yuga, when practically everyone is a Shudra and there's no Brahmins or Kshatriyas or Vaishyas. There are just Shudras who are either cheating less intelligent Shudras or being cheated by the more intelligent Shudras. Society of the cheaters and the cheated. So their duty is to figure out how to not to be cheated. But because they're less intelligent, the more intelligent Shudras, they are expert at cheating them. No matter what they do, they get cheated. And indeed, because people don't know what the purpose of life is, their whole life is just being misdirected. even the so-called intelligent Shudras, their life is also misdirected towards the same wrong goals that the less intelligent people have. They think that their goal is to lord it over the less intelligent. So that's also less intelligent. On the other hand, in the Vanashram system, everything was based upon sacrifice. Sacrifice, Jagavai Vishnu, sacrifice to Vishnu. Because by sacrifice to Vishnu, then the rains would come, and then when we get the real necessity of life, namely food. Of course, then what to do after you eat? Then you need some shelter, and there's family life, and then there's some defense. All that would be rather boring, because just to eat, sleep, mate, and defend, which is punapunacharvanana, is rather boring. And therefore, that although one's duty in the Vanashram system makes those things easily available to everyone, pure water, clean air, peaceful life, nice relationships with everyone, those become easily available by following the Vanashram system. But unless one adds God consciousness onto that, unless one adds the process of becoming conscious of Krishna, then it all becomes very boring. And as a result, people concoct things for a so-called happiness. Therefore, in modern society, they've created computers and cars and so many technological advancements just to try and stimulate one's mind and intelligence. Previously, people used to gossip about what was happening in their neighborhood, but now you can gossip about what's happening in everyone's neighborhood. And they think that's advancement. Previously, you would hear some bad news from your neighbor, but now you can hear bad news from everyone's neighbor. And they think that's advancement. Previously, you could eat fresh food and have clean air, but that's only available on vacations if you go to the right place. And they think they'll work all day and night creating a hellish situation for the society, and then on vacation they go to some place where people aren't working day and night to create a hellish situation. That's called a vacation place. The only places where there's no industry and factories, and so people go there for vacation. That's the reward for creating hell. So Arjuna was a little confused. He said, I should be doing my duty. I should be doing what's according to you, what is sacrifice. But somehow or another, I'm impelled to do someone else's duty, something else than what I'm supposed to do. So what is it? So Krishna says, Kama Asha, Krodha Asha, Rajaguna Samudbhava, Mahashino Mahapatma, Vidyanam Ihavarina. It is lust only, Arjuna, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world, which later on turns into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. Ata keno priyukto yam papam charati purusha anishanapi varshne avladi vinayojita. What impels me? So Krishna says it's lust, which turns into greed, which turns into anger, and this is our real problem. Not the bankers, not our enemy countries, or our real problem is our uncontrolled desires. Of course, unfortunately, in modern society, people think that to increase one's desires is actually advancement of civilization. They judge everything by the gross national product, how many unwanted things they're creating. If a society is not creating many unwanted things, it's considered to be primitive. That the aim of life is to create things, use them up, and then throw them away. The more you can do that, the more you're considered to be civilized. And if you don't do that, you're considered to be primitive. Never mind that this causes so much stress to the whole world, which is the opposite of what people are really trying to achieve. And it is when they did a survey trying to find out which nations are the happiest nations, they found out that the so-called civilized countries, people consider themselves the least happy. On the other hand, in the more primitive countries, like Bangladesh, where people have hardly anything, they consider themselves to be the happiest. Because although they didn't have many toys to play with, still they had a free mind, and they had nice relationships, and they had it relatively free from lust, anger, and greed. If there's nothing to hanker for, then you can't hanker. If you go to modern society and you go downtown, all there are stores trying to attract you to hanker for something. And the more intense it gets, the more gross the objects become to entice you to hanker for them. Places like Amsterdam are famous. There's so much competition to try to attract people for sense gratification. There is no limit to what's being advertised or how it's advertised. So in a country where there's nothing to get excited about, people are not excited, but they're peaceful. They may not be making a lot of money, but then there's nothing to buy. So they don't have to spend if they don't have any money, there's no problem, because even if they had money, they couldn't buy anything anyhow. And because they can't buy anything, all they can do is live peacefully and eat nicely. They even cook food there. They know how to cook, which is rather a primitive science according to some people. Slavery, being in the kitchen, cooking food, when we could be doing something important, like making missiles for the country. So people are there, they're nicely eating, there's fresh air because there are no factories, the water is not contaminated by all the chemicals, they even know some of their neighbors, however barbaric it may seem. Although they're not on Facebook, but they know their surrounding neighbors. And they're not even envious of them, because their neighbors have nothing either. Everyone has there's a sense of equality. Everyone is equally has nothing. Therefore, Krishna says, as soon as we get involved in lust and anger and greed, it covers the real nature of the self, and therefore the real happiness of the self becomes darkened and bewildered, and becomes impelled ever more to become ever more darkened and bewildered by its activities. So Krishna says one should search out the problem, and here the problem is we listen too much to crazy people, and we take them seriously. The whole modern society is based upon the false conception that we are the body and that we should supply unlimitedly to the unlimited desires of the senses. And this is our main problem, is that we don't control our mind, we don't control our senses, and therefore we become more and more implicated in a dream world of sense gratification rather than waking up from the implications of serving the unbridled senses. And most of it comes just from advertisement. If we don't go on the internet, there's no television, we don't look at the billboards, then most of our problems in life are solved. Because birth, death, old age, and disease is our real problem, but at least we can fix our mind upon Krishna and make a solution to those problems. But if we're so distracted by our attempts to be involved in the modern materialistic conception of materialistic experience and improvement, then of course we're always going to be hankering for what's ever new and disappointed with the old. That's what they're expert at. Oh, your computer is 5 years old. What's wrong with you? God doesn't love you. You probably don't love God, or else he would have reciprocated and given you a new computer. Oh, you don't know what's going on in the Arab countries. You're ignorant. Why are you smiling? Don't you know all the problems that are going on? So as long as one is implicated in all this hearing and chanting going on in modern civilization, one will always be agitated. Because there's no, as people become more and more sinful, therefore the reactions to their sinful activities become more and more serious. And therefore the problems become ever greater, and the reactions become ever greater, because their very solutions are not different from the problems that they created in the first place. It is said that madness means to think if you do the same thing over and over again, you'll get a different result each time. We see that the very people who create the financial problems are usually those people who have been assigned to solve them. And their solutions are the same things that created the problem in the first place. And yet people are expecting some other result other than that was actually than the same result they're always getting. But the Hare Krishna movement doesn't say get involved in solving all the material problems, but it says at least solve one's own problem by not overly getting involved in trying to solve materialistic problems in a materialistic way. By increasing one's lust, by increasing one's anger, by increasing one's greed, by increasing one's delusion. People, they think people are not working hard enough, so let's make them more and more lusty, so they can run after the carrot faster. And when they get one carrot, you tell the ass, one carrot, why don't you have the deluxe carrot? Why are you hankering only for that little tiny carrot? We have a deluxe carrot you can run after. And why only one carrot? You should have two, just in case your one carrot runs out. You should store up on carrots. You should get a special house to put carrots into. And if you can't get your carrot, it's not our fault, it's this other country's fault. We're innocent, we're only encouraging you to get carrots. We want you to have a carrot, but it's not our fault you can't get the carrot. You should get angry with these other people who are not letting you have the carrot, who are threatening your carrot. And therefore they create all kinds of delusions for people, so that, and people fall for it all the time because they're less intelligent and they're bewildered by the illusory energy. As Goebbels said, if you say the same lie enough times, people will believe you. So nowadays they only have to say it once or twice and people believe them. They forget, you know, that it's just a lie. They've created this idea of terrorism, the terrorist is going to get you. How many people have met terrorists lately? You're much more likely to get hit by a brick falling out of a window than killed by a terrorist. And yet they're not banning bricks near windowsills. So because people have become bewildered because they don't know really what their duty is, what the goal of life and how to achieve it, They think that the only alternative in life is to gratify the senses until the very last moment. Therefore, it's the job of the Krishna consciousness movement to advertise widely that there is an alternative to gratify the senses, that is engaging in devotional service, especially the chanting of the holy names of Krishna. Because by such holy names, then gradually one can see that one can live without lust and anger and greed, that these are not actually desirable. They're actually very much undesirable. It's not that I'm sitting around bored, how to become excited, well, let me become lusty, angry, and greedy, and then I'll become much more pleased and happy and peaceful. No, instead, one should chant Hare Krishna as an alternative to one's boredom, and see that there's a positive alternative to engage ourselves in. That if one can take pleasure in the chanting of the holy names, or at least in the philosophy and activities of devotional service, then one can see that there's something very positive to do in life, which doesn't really cost a lot of money, doesn't require great effort, doesn't require great amount of material technological advancement. Maybe one day they'll invent an electronic bead bag. You just, well, just like have these clickers, but they'll have a bead bag. You don't need counter beads or something. It's all recorded. But that's about as much technology as you really need. And even without that, one can very easily push down the counter bead and figure out how many rounds we've chanted. So one can become happy chanting Hare Krishna. That's as much as technology as one actually requires. And even if one doesn't have internet, even if one doesn't have a television, even if one doesn't have many materialistic things, still one can be happy just chanting Hare Krishna and associating with Krishna. Because Krishna is unlimited, and the happiness attained by associating with Krishna is also unlimited. And we don't need anything new. Krishna has been enjoying the same pastimes eternally, and they're becoming ever more enjoyable. It's not that we read the Krishna book, and after getting done with the Krishna book, we throw it away because we've already used up those pastimes. Now we have to find new pastimes. Sometimes the devotees, if they don't read carefully enough what's available, they think they need something new. And new, and new, and new. Something new about Krishna. As if Krishna is not good enough. We need something new about him. But in Bhagavad Gita at the end, when Sanjaya was remembering what he had already heard from Krishna, he said he was in ecstasy, remembering Krishna's universal form. He didn't say, now I'm remembering Radha and Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and things are getting better. But he said, just remembering this universal form of Krishna, I'm becoming ever more struck with wonder and I rejoice again and again. And remembering this wonderful conversation between Krishna and Arjuna, I'm taking pleasure at every moment. So if one can learn how to take pleasure from hearing and chanting about Krishna, then one can avoid so many unwanted desires, unwanted association, because that's what the whole world is aimed at, simply to increase one's materialistic consciousness. And although Andaya Tandira Pagiya Manaste Pisha Tandra Uru Dami Bada, certainly the blind people are misleading the other blind people. They don't know that Vishnu, Krishna, is the goal of life. They take something completely insignificant as the goal of life. Practically speaking, they haven't come up with anything new for so many years. It's simply the same thing over and over again. I guess, well, what are they? They're just gossiping and hankering for things that for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and just doing it electronically. Now people have no power to eat or sleep or mate or defend. So it's all doing, they're trying to do it in a virtual world instead of in a real world. You can't be a hero in the real world, so you can be a hero in your virtual world. You're insignificant here, but in your own virtual world, you become a great hero. And people, they advertise this as something advancement. And of course, to be a hero in your virtual world, you have to be a slave to the powers of being in this world. And of course, being a slave to the, you can't properly eat, you can't sleep, you can't mate, you can't defend yourself properly in this world, but you can have a few minutes in your virtual world where everything's going well. On the other hand, if one can chant Hare Krishna, if one can follow the principles that liberate one from materialistic consciousness, then the result is that even in this world, Krishna says, one can become free from all kinds of anxiety, and at the end of this life, go back to the spiritual world. So just to end with the fake analogy, the whole idea is to use our intelligence, as explained here, intelligence and Krishna consciousness. Just like a person who walks down the street and he sees a beautiful woman, and immediately the mind and senses say, go get her. But the intelligence, if there is any intelligence, might say, no, wait a second, she has a dot on her forehead, and she's on her side as a man, she might be married. But the senses mind say, oh, don't listen to that. Old-fashioned intelligence, it always comes up with the same story again and again. Next, I'll quote a verse from the Bhagavad Gita for you, or the Bible. No, the real philosophy in life is that if it feels good, then you should do it. That's the Bible. The golden rule. Everyone knows what the golden rule is? He who has the gold rules. So you follow that modern philosophy and you'll be happy. The soul now has the intelligence saying one thing and the mind sense is demanding something else. So it asks the intelligence, well, what is your reason that you don't want to serve the mind and senses? So if the intelligence is strong enough, it may come up with some reasons. And if it's not, then the soul tells the intelligence, don't tell me all this theoretical philosophy. Do something practical. Go get her. So the intelligence, which is more or less the directing force in the material world, says, all right, to the mind and senses, write her a letter. Tell her she's the most beautiful thing you've seen, and put in very small letters in the last 2 weeks. Tell her you're madly in love with her, that she should meet you in such and such place at such and such time, and you'll give her the sun, you'll give her the moon, and if she's really nice to you, you'll give her a few extra stars. But don't sign the letter, because I can see that that man next to her, he's twice as big as you are, and you might get into trouble. So in this way, the intelligence, instead of telling the soul to utilize the mind and senses to go up to the couple and give them a book and try to sell them a Bhagavad Gita or a Krishna book, instead is utilized to make plans for sense gratification. So that same intelligence can be used for spiritual advancement, or it can be utilized for materialistic, try to gratify the demands of the senses, which arise simply out of concoction. And due to the lack of true spiritual knowledge or intelligence, therefore it's simply misdirected the soul from its real purpose of life, which is self-realization, and wastes its time in the entanglement of materialistic sense gratification. Therefore, this hearing, this philosophy, is not simply some idle activity that a few philosophical people, they do in the Hare Krishna movement, because they can't do any practical work, therefore they sit around and read books, keep themselves occupied, and once in a while quote a verse in order to show that they actually did something in life. No, it's necessary so that we can fertilize our intelligence and control the mind and the senses. It's not a process of simply quoting some verses. It's actually becoming strong enough in spiritual life so that when we're presented by allurements, we're not distracted by them. Of course, we should be intelligent enough not to put ourselves in a position where we're surrounded by allurements and therefore try to become distracted from them. Much easier is just to avoid the allurements, and therefore there's no need to spend a lot of time trying not to be distracted. Therefore, having a book about Krishna, like Bhagavad Gita, and reading it, or chanting Hare Krishna, or serving the deities, or distributing books, or cooking for Krishna or something, they may seem like simple activities, but they're simply spiritual activities, and they won't distract us from the goal of life and entangle us unnecessarily in trying to gratify our senses for no other reason than to gratify. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
May I please ask, how is it possible that even we hear so many things about spiritual philosophy, we still have so many attachments and we want material things?
Because, well, why? Everything takes practice and experience. Because we're not experienced enough. We're not experienced enough how futile it is to try to gratify the senses, nor are we experienced enough of getting a higher taste from the activities of devotional service. So that may, if we try with suitable practice and we try to become detached from the materialistic pursuits that our mind and senses are demanding from us, then gradually that little spark that's covered by all the smoke, smoke being all our material desires and conceptions, and that little spark being a little bit of inspiration coming from Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra, and the super soul within our heart, if we handle that carefully, then gradually that little spark will be made to blaze, and then the smoke will go away. That's a question of handling our whatever level of Krishna consciousness we're at properly, try to regulate our activities the best we can, and try to gradually make advancement. And then gradually the allurements will not seem as alluring, and the attraction to Krishna consciousness will seem much more inspiring. Devotional service gradually becomes more enlivening and enlightening as we progress. Anything else? Yes.
How can we understand that we are different from our mind?
By chanting Hare Krishna in such a way is that we don't take our mind so seriously. We try to chant very sincerely to Srimati Radharani and Krishna, engage us in their service, and we do it both submissively, by hearing submissively, and by chanting sincerely, actually wanting to happily engage in their service. So the more we do that, then the more the mind will become purified. The more we engage our minds in Krishna service, then the mind, the more it becomes purified, the more we can actually see things clearly. On the bottom of a lake is a piece of gold. But if the lake is agitated, then of course we can't see the gold at the bottom of the lake. But if we simply allow the water to settle, then after a while, then when the water is settled, then we can see all the way down to the gold at the bottom. So if we don't agitate our minds unnecessarily by engaging them in materialistic pursuits, and instead engage them in Krishna service, then gradually the agitation will go away, we'll be able to experience our true spiritual nature. Anything else? Thank you very much.